Hello, folks. Welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk Data. I'm your host, Lebogang Langa. With my background in data and business intelligence, you can expect that the conversations that I'll be having with thought leaders across the industry might gravitationally pull toward the cloud, security, analytics, and data management. However, there's so much stuff with other areas of data that I would like to capture. And so today, I'm so very thrilled to bring you a groundbreaking episode featuring my very first guest, Lazola Ndamase. Lazola Ndamase is a dynamic and impactful data and analytics professional currently serving as Group Executive Head of Big Data, AI, Machine Learning and Cloud Technology at Vodacom. In this role, he leads initiatives to enhance data capabilities, focusing on data-driven decision-making and innovation within the organization. Prior to his tenure at Vodacom, Ndamase held significant positions in the financial sector, including Head of Data Insights and Management Information at Absa Bank and Head of Data Enablement and Analytics at Nedbank Corporate and Investment Banking. His extensive experience spans over 16 years in retail and banking, underscoring his expertise in data strategy and analytics leadership. What an impressive resume. I could go on, but in the interest of time, I will not. Lazola, thank you again for making the time to chat. How are you today?
Oh, I don't even know what to say. But yeah, no, thank you very much. I'm good, thanks. And how are you, Lebo?
I'm good. Thank you again. So, Lazola, we seem to have entered a very pivotal moment with the future of business as a result of AI. AI and data are not just support tools. I think we can both agree that they are now catalysts. They're starting to become the culture itself. But cultures are quite complicated. They don't shift overnight. And I wonder how much of this change is real and how much of it is wishful thinking. And I've seen survey results from publications such as Gartner showing a rise in companies claiming to have adopted data-driven cultures over the past few years. From your experience, Lazola, how can we distinguish between genuine cultural transformation and surface-level changes which are driven by hype? And what would you say are the real indicators or metrics that show that a company has truly embedded a data-driven way of thinking?
Okay, no, that's a great question. And I think we need to take a step back and look at the evolution of data over the years, right? Data and AI started out as much more decision support systems, where mostly, you know, you provide your executives and your leaders with what was known as management information reports, you know, MI reports, and then progressed to BI reports, where it's much more graphic in nature. And with that came a lot of pushback, because everyone would get a tool and then they'd revert back to their old ways of using Excel, etc. So I think within now, I'm talking about the early 2000s up until, let's say, mid 2010s, there's been a growing transformation when it comes to the need. The needs have become more. So more and more people are requiring much more in-depth analysis, much more in-depth insights. And with that comes the need for more data. So the standard way of data management then changed, because now we need to produce the data quicker. It must have more insights, and it must also not come as a very stock standard reporting. So I think the key indicators that have shown this is that more and more we see a proliferation, or we see a top-down need for insights. So meaning, from a board level, boards asking about AI, boards asking about data, exco's asking about more and more about what are we doing about this Gen AI story, you know, this new thing, and more and more we are seeing. And so the question around key indicators is, what are the leaders in the organization saying about what we're doing? Before, it was very much bottom up. It was us as data professionals, BI professionals at the time, trying to convince leadership that this thing is a much needed emphasis point or focus point. Now we are seeing them ask top down, what are we doing? So and so is doing it. What are we doing to respond to that? The market is waiting. What are we digitally transforming towards that? are we Gen AI enabled, et cetera, et cetera. And so it then gives the data professionals time then, or it gives them the mandate to build the capabilities that are now much more broader than what we had before, but still, you know, it gives us much more better mandate and the need for the right people and skills within an organization.
Thank you for that. And I think we can also agree that the companies that will win won't be the ones that simply automate faster. They'll be the ones that use AI to unlock deeper insights, serve clients better, and free up their workforce to focus on what only humans can do, which is building trust, solving real-world problems, and thinking creatively. So it's not just about replacing people, it's about amplifying potential. What are some of the unintended consequences you are already seeing or predicting as organizations lean harder into AI for productivity?
Right. Okay, that's an interesting question, because I think that's one of the things that keeps me up at night, to be honest, because the more and more we transform, or the faster we transform, the more and more stronger foundations are needed. So if you think about it in the analogy of your house, I think more and more people want the nice showers, etc. But no one has necessarily built the right architecture for those showers to be built on. So they want the nice things that come with the house, but they're not necessarily investing enough on the underlying foundations that build up the house. So I think with the need for productivity that comes with AI, much more emphasis is now placed on things like the boring stuff, quote unquote, that before we could not sell. Things like data governance, data management, metadata management, all of the key foundations that sit within any data ecosystem are now starting to be in the forefront of this, because more and more we're realizing that actually garbage in is garbage out, even though we've been saying it for all these years. More and more now, the more the results are less accurate, you go back and you say, actually, it's because of the data quality issues that we have in our database. Let's fix that. And I think one of the things I once said to one of my teams, and I think it was at my previous organization, was that the easiest way to get all of these things right is to think about BI before AI. Because BI will force you to build those foundations. AI jumps. It jumps and says, you know, let's build a model. Let's do this X, X, Y, and Z. So I think the more and more emphasis is put on AI pushing for productivity, the more and more we are now starting to emphasize on having data governance policies, having AI governance policies, and all of the other risk mitigating foundations that are needed for these sort of tools that are coming up to actually help us for productivity, for efficiencies, all of those things. And we do need a solid foundation. And I think that's what's come to the fore.
Okay. Yeah, true. So when companies look at this era, organizations 10 years from now, they might say 2025 was the year cultures finally started to change, or the year we confused tool adoption with true transformation. What would you love to see organizations do differently today to make sure the cultural shift towards data and AI is real and lasting?
So I think it almost, yeah, look, it's a good question. And I think it really does make one do a sort of introspection of going to the future, like you're saying, and looking back and says what has to be true today for that future to be realized. And I think, obviously, one of the things is that we need to focus on making data a first-class citizen versus the secondary citizen that we've always made it to be, and making sure that, again, those foundations are set up, our people are skilled in the right way for that future to be realized as well. So I think having a strong data as a first-class citizen mindset or a data product mindset is essential, because then it makes sure that when you're building that product, all of the right things that make of a monetizable product are thought of, like data governance, like I mentioned before. And second to that, I think the processes and people that we put in place, so the people that we put in place, the skills that are required are no longer just about, for example, having a data engineer just knowing data engineering, but they also need to know software engineering, because more and more what we are doing is as code, right? And for us to build anything as code, we need a software engineering mindset. So we need to upskill in our people within organizations so that they have skills that are transferable when those times come. And secondly, obviously, are the processes that we put in place today. So I'm talking about not data, processes, and people, but processes definitely, you know, the ways in which we work, the ways in which we collaborate with business. And by business now, I mean like the product teams of this world, the finance teams of this world, so that they are able to give us the right use cases for us to be able to show the value that's needed is important, extremely important. And then obviously the last one is we need to think about the right tech that is scalable in the future. We can't go on buying and replacing tech as things change, but we need to think a bit deeper and futuristically and say, if we were in this world, what tech stack would we have now that is able to live up until that point? Yes, things change, but you need not change your entire house for you to be able to live a good life, right? You need to at least change things here and there, not necessarily just overhaul the entire thing. And I think that's what's happening now. We move to cloud, you overhaul the entire legacy system. But you know, there's other ways in which we can get to that future. And obviously, the last one being that within your tech stack, you have to have a strong build versus buy approach, right? You have to know when to buy and when to build, because all of those have got their own pros and cons, and that is important for your future journey as well.
Some leaders, Lazarus, still see data and AI initiatives as purely offensive plays for growth and innovation and not defensive moves like risk management. Is there a danger that organizations are racing ahead with AI while underestimating the importance of governance? And I suppose you've touched on this and ethics.
Yes. So I think for me, that goes without saying, right? A lot of what I've seen within the industries and especially within banking is that for anything that has to do with governance and ethics, a stick has to first be done. So, for example, the 2008 crisis had to happen before a regulation like BCBS 239 was put into place, which forced banks to be able to look into data governance and data architecture. So and naturally, that's what happens, is that a fine first has to be imposed on an organization for them to actually realize that this thing actually was needed. And so data governance as a consequence has got a very bad rap, right? Because it is seen as this hindrance to progress. But if we looked at it in the mentality of it is actually the thing that helps us in the future be able to know when the data is accurate, right? And there's quality and there's lineage and there's access to the data, the right access, etc. I think it would go a long way because the mindset needs to change, right? We need not have a stick first. It has to be a carrot type of approach. So when I think of data governance and, you know, AI governance as the cousin, because for me, the two are not necessarily the same thing, right? The one asks if the data is accurate, and AI governance asks what happens when this data then drives autonomous decisions. What happens? What's the consequences? So what's the model risk that is in there? So I think if we view it, that, and the more and more, by the way, the more and more we get into this Gen AI, agentic AI type of use cases and initiatives, the more and more we realize the importance of data governance. And hopefully at that point, we will know that, you know, data governance secures the ingredients and, you know, AI governance then, or it's the chef, which is in this case, the models. So I think that's what's happening currently, is that the two are sort of converging. But it has taken a long time for that to happen. But I do think that more and more now is being done to make sure that our data is better governed.
Okay. We're seeing that data and AI leadership roles are still they're evolving, and there's a demand for these positions. It's growing, but there seems to be a struggle between the clarity and the structure. And given the struggle with defining the role of CDO and Chief AI, and maybe Ula Zola, who's heading the AI and ML capability at Vodacom, what do you think is the biggest gap between where we are with data leadership today and where we need to be for the roles to truly drive business value?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question, because I think it's gotten a bit much more emphasis now over the years, right? The more and more we've A lot of the initiatives that have to do with AI have been in the forefront. The more and more the need for someone to look after or to be responsible for ensuring that data is governed, trusted, and monetizable, etc., is placed. So I think what has happened is the chief data officer now is much more important than ever, right? Because before, like you mentioned in the previous question, we're now moving from seeing the CDO as a defensive person to now seeing them as an offensive person, but without forgetting that they've got defensive traits, right? Because a data officer, unlike, let's say, an AI officer, will come in with a much more holistic approach towards the AI journey, because they will consider all of the elements that sit within your data value chain. So data management, reference data management, etc., as well as then the machine learning and AI portion of it. So I think there's still a gap when it comes to the mandate of the CDO, because currently they do not necessarily sit at the right tables. I won't say at the table, because I think that's a long way to go, because the table is when they are directly reporting to the CEO, etc. But I do see them now much more than ever reporting to, let's say, second to the CEO, etc. But I think what is missing there is that then the mandate that they have is, and the budgets that they have, the investment decisions that they make, are then sort of squashed, because they aren't the ultimate decision maker when it comes to those things. So there is still a bit of a way to go in building these data offices and also making them the executive responsible for data, reporting directly to the CEO. But I think there's still a way to go. And I think, you know, obviously within some of the industries that we see, it's differing in terms of maturity, but I do see less and less job roles that have to do with CDOs nowadays. And I don't know if that is because the organizations have realized that the people that they have are enough to do the job that's required. But I do see that as, because I think there was a LinkedIn survey that actually showed the decrease in the job roles that have to do with CDAO and CDO in South Africa over the years. But, you know, that could be a good or bad thing. It could just mean that internally people are actually stepping up to the plate, or it could mean that actually companies more and more are not seeing the need for these type of people, because they've got, you know, the internal heads of AI who are going to be able to do all of these great and wonderful things without, you know, the burden of having a chief, for example. So that's what I'm seeing as for now. And I think CDOs for me are very important, because they drive the cultural change, you know, that's required. But the absence of one is something that organizations need to look into as well.
Okay, so beyond relying on personal experience and the expertise of their teams, who does a CDO turn to for guidance? You know, who can serve as a sounding board to push their thinking, or simply someone who has been through similar challenges and truly grasped the pressures, the challenges and passion involved in unlocking the transformational potential of data?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think for the most part, CDOs are the loneliest people ever, because their job is unlike any of the other verticals or functions, right? If you think of the chief marketing officer, it's very easy for them to have a clear roles and responsibilities matrix of what exactly they should be doing. If you think about the COO, they've got a very clear as well. CIO, I think the CIO took some time, but now the chief information officer has got a very clear mandate. When it comes to the CDO, I think that's when you being a change agent comes in, because it is really not like any other function. So it's very difficult for you to draw learnings. But I think the CIO would be the closest that a CDO could be potentially tap into, because anyway, within an organization, that is one of your closest allies, right? Because of the fact that they look after the tech stack and all of those things. It is important then to always lean into the CIO, and also because they've got the existing relationship if you're coming in from outside, right? They've got the existing relationships with the various areas within the organization. So, I mean, to put it simplistically, I think that is the closest ally you can sort of tap into. But broader than that, I think CDOs need to be out there within the community of data and have a support network that they can tap into. So, for example, a couple of people do go to the Catherine Data Summer School, and those are actually worldwide networks that they actually you can keep and you can tap into when you're running into issues or you are soundboarding an idea that you have for your organization without necessarily breaking any privacy considerations. So I think also having a network around you that sits outside of your organization is very important. And I think within the South African context, going to the right events and networking with the right people who are at the same level or upper, also goes a long way in sort of empowering the CDO to be able to, in times of need, find the right guidance and motivation and mentoring.
The role of the CDO has evolved from focusing on risk and compliance to now driving business value through data. So that's a massive shift in expectations. So what steps do you think CDOs can take to not only prove the strategic value of data and AI initiatives, but also ensure that their organizations make the foundational investments needed for AI success?
All right. Okay. So the steps, right? So I think, it won't be an exhaustive list because I think I'll leave out some which might be necessary, which might be, required. But I think first and foremost, one of the important things that I see now that I didn't see before is the importance of having your data strategy being business-led, right? It doesn't always start with the business and it doesn't always end with the business. Everything in between is enablement. Having a clear idea of your organization's strategic imperatives, especially the functions that you are sort of looking after. So, for example, if you are looking after marketing, understanding marketing's strategic imperatives and then mapping those to data capabilities that are going to be enabling those imperatives and being able to measure success about those initiatives is very important, because most of the time, what has been happening over the years is that data professionals have been doing initiatives for the sake of those initiatives and not necessarily for the sake of the value to be derived by business. And that has led to, at times, distrust or degrading of investment into the function, because now the right people who were approached to invest are not seeing the return investments that they're putting in, because they're not seeing the revenue uplifts that they're supposed to be seeing because of this. Or if it's not a revenue generating function, they're not seeing the decrease in risk, right? If, for example, you are in banking or treasury or things like that. So what has happened then, what needs to happen first then is that you need to map out your initiatives back to value for the business. And that by implication means that you need to understand the objectives of the organization. Then secondly, you then need to look after your processes. So you need to make sure that the processes that are in place are enabling those initiatives. So things like the ways in which you work as organizations, right? How do you collaborate with business? How do you make sure that business is always kept abreast in terms of what you are currently doing? And then thirdly, I think of processes. Not processes. You can cut that out. I think people that need to do the work also need to be put at the front and center by the CDO. So having the right types of team organization, so centralized or decentralized, or if I put it another way, if you look at your data operating model, how do you do that? Do you embed data scientists within the business units or do you centralize them? Right? And that can go both ways, because it really depends on the size of the organization. And it sometimes makes sense that you centralize and you just become a support desk type of machine. The bigger the organization, then maybe it's more important to embed your data scientists and your BI people, so that they get the domain knowledge to be able to execute the work and then have a dotted line to the center of excellence that sits in the middle. So it always goes with knowing your business and knowing where your business is going for you to make this type of decisions. And then lastly, I guess, it is about then making sure that you've got the right data capabilities. So if you're looking at the entire, if you're looking at your data management framework, if it's got data architecture, data modeling, data quality, you know, even before you get to platform, right? All of those capabilities need to be mapped back to the enablement of the objectives that you had set out. So I think those are some of the key considerations. And then obviously the tech that's supposed to hold to enable all of that, or the platforms that are supposed to enable all of that, are really important. And as a strong characteristic of a CDO should be their ability to manage stakeholders, because being a CDO is a relationship scale, right? It is about, like you said, being able to work with other executives to make sure that you get the right investment because you're focusing on the right things, and all that, and all of that then requires you to be the salesperson. So because you're always selling, and if you've got no one buying, I mean, then your product is you, then the need for your product is actually not, doesn't make sense. So you need to be the salesperson, and by implication, being a salesperson means that you have to be very good at relationship management, which is for me one of the key characteristics of a CDO that makes them be able to get the investments that they need, and the support, right? And the support that they need from this, from executive sponsorship perspective.
Do you think that, you know, the confusion around the CDO role, the chief AI role, is delaying real progress in data and AI strategy, or is this just a growing pain of a more complex data ecosystem?
I think it's the latter. I think the more complicated the ecosystem, the more the roles. Because marketing of, you know, chief financial officer, not much has changed since the early 90s, right? They're still doing the same type of accounting up until now. Marketing still do the same type of marketing. There's no, well, I mean, look, except for some nuances in terms of the channels that they do it in, but it's more or less the same, right? It's about, you know, doing those 7 P's of, I don't know if it's 9 now, but 7 P's of marketing, et cetera, et cetera. So those still remain. I think for the, on the data front, a lot then has changed over time. So the data, chief data officer wasn't given the necessary amount of time to solidify their role within an organization. So before it was about, you know, data governance, data management, et cetera, et cetera. And before you knew it, it had to be about the offensive side. And before you knew it, you know, we had to get into being an AI officer and knowing all of these other, you know, things around AI. Now you needed a much more mathematical, analytical person who's actually taking up this role, and you didn't see the need for the much more defensive side. But now you're seeing issues with these models, and now you need the defensive side. So there's just been too much. So there's just been too many constant disruptions within the ecosystem itself for there to be a solid mandate for this particular individual. So I think that has caused a bit of disruption. And for me, like I said, I mean, look, being a CDAO or CDO or all of those things need not define the fact that you should be, you know, you should have this degree or that degree or whatever the case may be, but it really does require one to understand data intrinsically and also one to be a good relationship or stakeholder manager. I think other than that, everything else sits within your teams. So the capabilities that sit within your teams, they need to be robust, etc. So I think the individual themselves often gets, you often, you know, hear someone saying, no, they need to have a PhD if they're AI officer. I don't really think that's the case, because what you're doing is that you are not necessarily doing mathematical modeling at that level. What you're doing is that you're trying to set a vision and a strategy that your teams are going to be able to execute on. And I think for that, it need not be as confusing as it is now. But I think we're sort of getting there. I think there is a general consensus that people understand that the attributes that make up for a good CDO don't sit on the far left or the far right. So they sort of sit somewhere in the middle. And I think it's finding that middle that organizations need to sort of look for.
Thank you. There's an urgent need for Africa to take the reins in AI development. We need solutions, I'd say, that are not just imported, but are also locally relevant. And that is a call to all African nations. It's about shaping technology that truly understands and reflects the challenges and opportunities across the continent. And it's also crucial for understanding that our development in AI needs to be tailored to the South African context and needs and not dictated from outside. How can businesses and tech experts collaborate to ensure that AI solutions not only meet local needs, but also build SA's competitive edge on the global stage?
Well, I think that's a great question, because I think that's one of the critical elements that are currently missing and we have not yet fully appreciated or looked into yet. I think there's a couple of wide and few and in-between initiatives that are being done, but I don't think that there's a concerted effort into fixing those problems. So for me, I think in Africa particularly, things like AI is not just a leap in technology, right? It's really about it's a shortcut through decades of digital backlog, and navigating that is going to give us the chance to leapfrog legacy infrastructure, you know, democratized knowledge and sort of localize, if I could put it that way, intelligence. So I think the best way for us as tech professionals, data experts, AI experts, etc., for us to be able to address these is for us to have a collaborative forums in which we're able to voice out exactly what the challenges are, and exactly what we can do to help that. So, for example, there is a great initiative that's being done out of University of Pretoria by Dr. Fokosi, and I'm just not sure of his foundation's name. And what he's doing there is that they're actually building models Gen AI models and LLMs that are going to be able to solve African problems like the lack of full comprehension of our languages, for example. So today, if, for example, I call in at a call center and I'm being answered by a chatbot, what if I speak Xhosa? You know, will it fully and what if within Xhosa I speak a different dialect of isiMbondo? Will it be able to differentiate what I'm saying, or will it just sort of have the put it into a normal bracket of, let's say, isiZulu, which I think most of the LLMs nowadays have? So I think initiatives like that will go a long way, and more of them, and more initiatives that look at solving African problems rather than Western problems, I think will go a long way. Because I guess another big issue is that most of Africa is still not able to have access to some of these tools, because, for example, the penetration when it comes to smartphones is not as high as in the West within the African continent. So how do you then make sure that people have got access? Do we have the right infrastructure to be able to support? Do we have the right internet speeds? You know, all of those are the positive sum collaboration that we need to get to if we are to say we're solving AI problems. Because I could be solving an AI problem, but the person I'm solving it for might not even have the access to be able to get to my solution, right? So I think that it really requires cross-industrial or cross-sector collaboration for it to actually make sense, not just from an AI perspective, but from the various facets like, you know, telcos, right, and the likes, to be able to get to the right solutions for Africa.
Thank you. I want us to go back to data governance, and I want us to just delve a bit deeper, because we hear the word and think access control, compliance, you know, kills momentum. But I want us to look at it as something that is an engine for trust, growth, and collaboration, you know. And we see it as a blocker and something that slows teams down. So, Lazola, if governance isn't just about access of a table or a schema, what else is it about, and why is that shift so critical if we want to build systems and organizations that actually last?
Right. No, that's a very good question. So I think, I mean, look, data governance for me sits way beyond just access, because for me, what data governance does fundamentally is that it ensures that the data that is coming into my ecosystem is of high quality. It has got the right lineage. And by lineage, I mean, I'm able to say this data set came from this system at this time, and it has these sort of attributes, right? And again, I mean, look, before I talked about the kitchen analogy. So if I look at a kitchen, right, or a restaurant, or the kitchen of a restaurant, right? For me, data governance sits right where the ingredients are entering the kitchen from wherever we are getting them from the supply chain. And what it is doing in the at that point, that it is making sure that the ingredients that people are going to be eating are, you know, they're not rotten. we've got enough of it to be able to make these sort of meals that we're going to make. So that's just an analogy, right? But I'm just trying to get a very nice way of saying it is a guardrail that or a control that ensures that the right decisions are made once all of this clever stuff is done with AI, machine learning, data science, etc., or even business intelligence for that matter. So it goes way more than just, you know, it being an access requirement, but it actually does ensure the quality of your data is also well. So now I know that there is data quality that sits aside from as a component, but if for example we say that data governance is, you know, that we've got a data governance committee that looks into data quality, that is a control in its own. Because one of the things that data governance does is that it ensures that people have got ownership of the data. So identification of data owners is one of the most critical things that an organization can do, because it eases up the way in which we resolve solutions. And for data governance, that is one of the key priorities, to identify ownership and then assign stewards who are going to be able to be reachable when things go wrong. Or when we are defining a metric, or we are defining the data, we've got full ownership from someone who can actually give us the best definition of this particular element as possible. So if me and Lebo are saying, well, you know, profit is actually not, X plus Y, it is actually X minus Y, and we differ, we need to have that person who can actually give us the truth about what this actual definition means. So I think data governance is much more broader than just access, and in a way, it is one of the critical elements that is missing within the existing ecosystems that I've seen, is that there's no strong data governance drive, and if it is there, it is just seen as a policy. That's it. No one is necessarily executing on those policies. So it is just seen as a tick box exercise versus an actual program that's supposed to be run within an organization.
Mm. So I guess the next time someone groans at the word governance, maybe what they're really feeling isn't the weight of the rules. Maybe it's the lack of design. And maybe that's exactly where the opportunity lies. So something that doesn't get a lot of airtime is stewardship and decision rights. And I think they quietly determine whether the data becomes an asset or a liability. So in your view, why has the industry, if at all, has been slow to elevate stewardship and decision rights in everyday practice? And what do you think is standing in that way?
So I think when it comes to stewardship, I think one of the critical impediments to a proper stewardship program is usually role assignment. Most of the people or most of the organizations do not have the necessary skills to be able to, number one, identify data stewards. And even if they do identify the data stewards, the people who have now been designated to be data stewards do not want to be data stewards because of the accountability that they now have. Because the minute you say to someone, for example, that, well, Lebo, today you're going to be the data steward, and if anything goes through this gate of ours, which is our function, and it is wrong when it goes to the CEO, you will be accountable. No one wants to hear that, right? So there's then this whole pushback around people being assigned that role. And then also the organizations don't want to then hire a person who's going to be the steward, because in their minds, this person is just going to define the data or they're going to do all of these things. And after that, they're just going to be sitting there in the on the bench, not understanding that it actually goes way wider than just, you know, definitions of flows or all of the generic definitions that data stewards have. It also goes into metadata, right? It also goes into reference data. It doesn't just sit within a single vertical, within the entire value chain of data. And actually, and some organizations that I've been to actually have got a chief data steward, for example, who reports to the CDO directly. So it is an entire growth path on its own, but it's just that it's in its infancy when it comes to organizations realizing its criticality, right? I think a lot of the organizations see it as a, like you said, as this impediment to progress or to our in our journey. But I think the way that they can change that is for them to have the right people or the right custodians as the data stewards, who are able to, and also I guess another thing that people usually get back to is that, well, you know, I'm not being paid for this. This is not what I was hired for. That also speaks to the way in which we incentivize those roles. So you can't just say to someone, well, here's more work, but the remuneration is not the same. So there's a couple of considerations that come from HR then when it comes to more accountability, more incentives, more rewards, et cetera, more recognition on this front, et cetera. So I think that goes a long way. Incentive goes a long way in giving people confidence that they're going to be able to do the work, even though, you know, its definition, you know, might be a bit blurry, but they still would be able to do that. So I think that for me is how I would put it.
What advice would you give to, say, data architects, engineers who are just starting their journey in implementing governance first systems? What's the biggest challenge they'll possibly face and how can they overcome it?
Oof, I think the advice for data architects. Okay. I think data is, I usually say data is simple. It's not necessarily easy. It's like meditation, you know. You can sit there, but once you sit there, you'll realize that it's actually not easy because it's so simple. So I think one of the things we need to realize is that organizations are still very much resistant to the investment into data, which will not give them the shiny toys, right? So shiny toy syndrome is something that sits within the executive layer because all that everyone wants to see is ChatGPT type of chatbots. They want to see, you know, these AI-enabled BI dashboards. All of those things still sit at the minds of the existing guard within the executives, because what they do is that they go to a conference, they'll see something shiny, and they'll come back and say, I want it implemented. But as data architects, on the other side of the spectrum, what we are looking for as data professionals is building those foundational capabilities, right? And building those foundational architectures that will enable all of this. And what those don't have is the luxury of time, right? Because to build out, let's say, a data culture or to build out a master data management type of initiative takes time. And what is being asked for is for you to do whatever is being done out there in the least amount of time possible. So that is the navigating, or that is the path where we need to navigate, right? We need to find out how can we do whatever it is that we need to do in the least amount of time possible, right? So we need to find accelerated growth paths within our architectural and our data management work streams because, the long and short of it is that CEOs don't give data enough time for it to mature. Even though we might say we need a 5-year projection, no one is going to be waiting for 5 years to see ROI. They want to see it now. And the way in which tech is moving and changing so constantly, and unfortunately, I mean, it really does not make sense for us to be going down these long-winded transformation programs. So I think from an architectural perspective, I think that's what we need to navigate. And it goes with stakeholder management as well, right? You need to make sure that within the community in which you are finding the audience, you are able to express the trade-offs. The trade-offs that come with doing things too quickly without necessarily taking into considerations what needs to be foundationally built, right? So all of the technical debt that you accumulate has to be paid at some point. So the debt never necessarily goes away. It's just a matter of when it gets paid, and usually at the detriment of whatever value you wanted to achieve. So putting that in a, obviously in a diplomatic way, but it does need to be something that's surfaced, is that things take time. Unfortunately, change takes time. But the way in which we are treating it now is actually going to hamper the value that needs to be realized in the future. And so it's about then choosing which of the two we are willing to go with. Because there's a number of examples that I could go through, right? There's a number of examples around failed implementations because at the very beginning, someone did say that, well, look, we're not quite ready. There's no AI readiness within the organization, but we're still full steam ahead. And we found ourselves in the right, in the exact same spot 3 to 4 or 5 years later. So, and that's not to say, well, gotcha, but it's to say we need the right people in leadership who are going to be able to have the foresight to know that whatever we are saying as data professionals, data architects, and you know, solution architects, etc., needs to be taken into account into our strategic planning. And for me, anyway, that's why I always look at data architects as when I look for a data architect, I always want that strategic mindset, because I want someone who's going to be able to explain to whoever the audience is what impacts are going to be derived if we go through certain scenarios, so scenario planning. And that is sometimes how you can get the message across.
Okay. You know, as someone who has been responsible for creating dashboards and also being a part of the ETL process, who should own data quality? Is it the engineers, the data owners, the leadership, or is it the fact that it's everyone's problem, part of why it gets lost?
Yeah. Now, a good question. And I think this, it's actually one of those questions that have been asked through the ages, who's responsible for data quality. And it goes back to that data ownership story that I mentioned, right? Because I think for me, through the value chain, there should be validations, checks, and balances that make sure that data quality does not make it through to our dashboards, etc. However, the fundamental or the key owner of data quality for me sits with the source. So if you are a CRM system and you are giving me data about customers and you get Lazula's ID number wrong, right? Yes, I'm at fault for not picking it up when I was moving the data from your system to my system, but you are responsible, right, for making sure that that data never makes it out anyway. So what then? What does that then mean in a practical sense? So at a bank, if someone is capturing my details and they for some reason put in a cell phone number that's got 14 characters, it is the onus of the whoever the application owner is to put a quality check in that field of the phone number to make sure that it's always 10 numbers, for example. That's a silly example, but it's those are the types of key roles and responsibilities that have to be put on the data owners to be able to make sure that data quality is not compromised when it leaves their system. Because most of the time, when we try and fix data towards the end of the value chain, that is when things are left to be a bit subjective, right? And we make assumptions based on our preconceived idea of what good looks like. Right. And that can lead to some bad reporting and bad decisions being made ultimately. So I think the pure onus of data quality for me sits at the very beginning of the value chain. You must make sure it's like at a retail shop, right? If you are at, let's say, a Woolies or I don't know, TFS, Foschini Group or whatever the case may be, if you get bad material from a Chinese importer or exporter, the onus is on you to make sure that there's a quality control check at the point of entry so that you can send it back, right? And it doesn't make its way to Lazula's when I'm buying, I see, you know, this ripped thing. But within, when it does get into the ecosystem, It is then also the accountability of the various points within the supply chain to make sure that it does not pass certain points. So I think there's an accountability perspective and a responsibility perspective. And I think the ultimate accountability sits with the data owners in this case, which would be the source system owners of whatever system you get those data sets from.
So I just want us to go to machine learning. It involves a lot of moving parts, data, futures, models, hyperparameters. How do you then manage the complexity of governance across those different stages of the ML lifecycle?
So within the ML, it's a good question. And I think within the machine learning lifecycle, data governance for me sits a bit pre the ML lifecycle, because the readiness of the data needs to imply that within the data set that you are reading from, there's a certain level of accuracy. Not a certain level of accuracy, there is accuracy to a point, right? That because if you're training your data and you're training it on bad data, it leads to a bad outcome anyway. Because then your whatever you were training the data set based off of is also wrong. So you need to make sure that before you even begin your ML lifecycle, there is a data lifecycle that has already happened to ensure that the data coming in is to a certain standard. And I guess within then the ML lifecycle, there are checks and balances that need to be put into your machine learning pipelines that can ensure accuracy. And you can put data quality checks within that as well. So I think for me, within the ML lifecycle, you can only go as far as to do things like model risk and AI governance. But throughout the data lifecycle, I think you should always put checks and balances, the right governance and all of that within the data lifecycle. Within the ML lifecycle, I think you have gone too far to be, it's like you saying to me, well, within a BI lifecycle, I should be putting in governance. Yes, you should. Things like access, make sure that the right people are not seeing the data, etc. You are doing measurement of the quality of the data that's there. But in terms of mitigating that, I think it all sits within your data pipelines and your data ecosystem versus your ML ecosystem.
So with all the fascinating insights that we've discussed today around data governance, machine learning, and architecture, I'm curious to know, what is your why in data? What drives you to keep pushing the boundaries in this field?
I've been asked this a couple of times in interviews. but I think it's for me, data from the very beginning was always something that I saw as a key enabler within an organization to help grow organizations, even before the hype, right? Back when I was still, doing my grad program, I always saw it as a key enabler because of, again, like I said, everything that had to do with decision support for me meant that I'm actually helping the organization make decisions that will, grow it, right? Irrespective of the function that I was sitting in. So if I could be sitting in HR and I could still be giving the HR director the right amount of detail for them to make decisions around resourcing. So it's about what am I ultimately trying to, what is the person I'm doing this for able to do in order to grow the organization that I'm in? And more importantly, now, as from a thought leadership perspective within the community, which in the South African context, what are we sort of enabling as a community when it comes to, like you mentioned, the African problem, right? Is data a key part of our future? Definitely. And then as a key person within that future, then it gives me a lot of joy to know that what I'm doing is actually helping the betterment of, the country and the continent as a whole. Purely because of the things that we are asking and the things that we are building, which are leading us to the positive outcomes that are coming out within the organizations and, the economy as a whole.
I believe you've sat on many hiring panels, you know, looking for the right candidates for teams. I'm curious about your perspective, you know, in today's rapidly evolving data landscape. Would you say that procuring a diverse set of technical skills is enough? Or is it also about effectively communicating or knowing how to position oneself to land the role in tech?
Yeah. So in tech, unfortunately, there has to be some level of aptitude. There has to be some level of competency that's as a bare minimum. But I think more and more of the panels that I've sat in, what I look for is never true competence around the subject, right? It's always about the attitude of the person. So I think having the right attitude for me sets you apart. Then if I had to write you a 2x2 graph, right, and I said on the y-axis I've got aptitude, which is, you know, competencies, etc., or, you know, knowing the tools or whatever the case may be, and on the y-axis I'd have your attitude, right? For me, if you sit a bit far to the right on the attitude part, but you lack a little bit of the competency part, I'll take you as a higher versus someone who's got a strong competency but a bad attitude, right? So I think because then you are able to, at least if the attitude is right, then you're able to mold the person as you go along and teach them and mentor them into what they need to become for them to fulfill the role. But the person with the bad attitude is unteachable because they believe that they know it all. They do this, you know, that all of this, is, this world is theirs. And as a result, then they become what the bad bunch within the organization, because then they are not able to provide the right outputs as far as I'm concerned. So I look for attitude. More obviously, you have to, like I said, you have to tick some boxes. You cannot tick all the boxes, but you must tick some boxes. But the attitude to the hunger must be there. The attitude must be right. And for me, then that is the height that I usually go for.
Okay, I'll close it off with this. What one uncomfortable truth about Gen AI adoption do you think a lot of leaders are ignoring and will probably regret later?
For me, Gen AI isn't just a new technology. It's a new interface to knowledge, judgment, and creativity. But I think more and more, the real shift here isn't about automation. It's about delegation, right? And I think when you're doing the delegating to Gen AI, you must make sure that you're not losing your creativity as a person, right? And the more we delegate, the more we will think that the machine must think for us and we mustn't do any thinking at all. And as a result, we will find that more and more people coming into the system will be less creative about the innovations that we put together, because they'll be delegating all of their thought processes to the two machines. So I think one thing that I'm worried about as I also use these tools is, what am I outsourcing? Am I that lazy now that I actually can't even think of scheduling something for my daughter or my son, whatever? Because now all I do is I go to ChatGPT and I say, what can I do this weekend? Right. So that is offloading your creativity and delegating into a machine. And what we need to be careful of is making sure that we're delegating the right things that still keep us as humans engaged, creative, and the likes. We're no longer asking machines to process instructions anymore. We're asking them to shape outcomes. And those outcomes, you know, lead to the detriment or the success of organizations. So that requires not just better models, but, you know, better ethics, better governance, and human alignment, importantly. Because I think human outside of the loop when it comes to some of these decisions could lead to disaster. Could also lead to success, but we just need to be careful about what we are delegating.
Thank you for joining us, Lazar. Thank you so much. We'll chat soon.
Thank you for having me. And we will chat soon.
Thank you again for joining us. It's been insightful having you on the show. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone who's just as passionate about data as we are. Until next time, keep asking great questions, keep digging into the numbers, and as always, stay curious.